This is Ozarks at Large. Several committees at the state capitol are expected to deal with important and controversial matters this winter. The House Public Health Committee may have the most to consider by the end of the session. Last week was an indication of how contentious some of these discussions might become. An early release of an audit of the state's Medicaid system has been delayed, creating sniping across partisan aisles. And several bills dealing with reproductive rights and abortion are also headed toward debate. And there is the big discussion looming in regard to the possible expansion of Medicaid.
Late last week, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business talked to Representative John Burris, a Republican from Harrison, and the chairman of the House Public Health Committee. Roby asked him about these matters and others.
You've got a lot of pro-life, anti-abortion bills. You've got just a variety of things that deal with reproductive rights. Mm-hmm. How are you going to handle that coming into your committee? It's volatile stuff. It's definitely got a lot of passion on both sides of that issue.
How I'll handle it's pretty simple, especially as committee chair. You're really just there to really more as the overused analogy of being an umpire and calling the balls and strikes. We already had one bill come through that was controversial, Representative Wilkins, House Bill 1100. Similar to that, we need to have debate. We need to have everybody express their views on the issue, especially on an issue like that, though. I think it's something where most people kind of know how they feel, and that's a good thing. That's not to minimize the debate. It's actually to highlight the fact that it's such an important debate. It's very well defined most times. You get into some of these technical debates on language and legislation, but for the most part, people know how they feel about abortion. And so we'll have a good debate. We'll have a lot of discussion. I think a lot of these bills are going to be vetted previously, having been filed before, maybe coming over from the Senate. So,
do you have some concerns because the objections that have been raised to some of them is that it will violate aspects of the Constitution, previous court precedent. Does that not concern you that you're going to potentially go down that road and have to deal with the state cost in that respect?
Yeah, I mean, legitimate threats of litigation concern me, but to be honest, I've never heard a bill filed that was controversial that wasn't threatened to get us into litigation. So I think it's a little bit of an overused threat. I'll examine things on their own merits and make a determination whether or not I think it would actually put us at risk for litigation. I don't know that any of the bills that have been filed actually do that. I think it's a threat that people use but rarely plays out.
Do you think that this is the best use of the legislature's time to debate these types of bills that are so controversial and divisive and deal with these passionate social issues? You're really down here to pass a budget and keep the function of state government going. This is a law that impacts people's lives, their bodies, and the unborn.
Yeah, I mean, if we're not talking about the controversial stuff, what are we going to be talking about? The less important stuff. So, I mean, I think it's absolutely the role of the legislature, especially the Public Health Committee. You've got 100 people in the House, 35 in the Senate, all have different passions and different views. I've been a guy that's really probably been more focused on the budget during my short time here, budget and taxes, and so that's a passion of mine, but you've got to wear many hats down here, and I think the social issues are still a pretty key component of that. While all the other discussions are taking place, I don't think they take away from each other at all. We still have to pass a budget. We're still going to talk about tax reform, but we need to address some of these issues too because they're important to the people of Arkansas.
Let's talk about where some things go with the budget. Obviously, Medicaid is going to be the linchpin to kind of unravel the budget and mm-hmm. give you guys the biggest piece of the jigsaw puzzle to put into place. I sense particularly from the Audit Executive Committee meeting this afternoon, that everybody's just going to kind of sit and wait to see what comes out of this audit report. First of all, have you seen the audit report that's been discussed?
No, haven't seen it.
What do you think it addresses?
Based on the executive committee meeting that you and I just attended, it seems like it is some previous audit findings, but then also this current year single audit findings that was due to be released in March, but they're going to just release in a special report early because of how it relates to our current debate about Medicaid. And I think that's the right decision, and we'll see what the audit says. But it seems like some of what's in there is going to be relevant to the discussion that we're having about Medicaid and whether or not we're spending our dollars in the most efficient way.
If it's been out in 2009, 2010, 2011, which will be incorporated into these findings, mm-hmm. that's already been reported. It's already been out there for you guys to review. What could possibly be different?
I don't know. And that's why I think it would be good for the public to see the audit. And it may be nothing. But, you know, regardless of all of that, I think it's been the longstanding position of many of us in the House and Senate that we have a very expensive and out-of-control Medicaid system as it is. You know, it was projected earlier in the year that we were going to face a $400 million deficit in funding. We've got over 750,000 people, population of Arkansas, on the system now. And, you know, in regards to expansion, I just think a lot of us have felt it's smarter to slow down and make sure we're doing what we're currently doing. And I think if this audit shows us some ways that we can improve our systems, and the dollars we're already spending, then we need to do that. And I think that's going to be the key part of the discussion moving forward.
Do you think you have the information that you need to make some of the Medicaid decisions in terms of closing the gap? Do you think you know where the money's going to come from to do that in terms of whether or not to decide on expansion one way or the other? Do you think you have the information you need to do that?
I mean, that's a good question. And I mean, I think we have some information, but a lot of the target keeps moving. I mean, the gap's been shrinking every day. I don't know necessarily why, but I think we're probably going to see that the funding shortfall be even smaller as we move forward through this debate. And so, you know, we're moving away from that $400 million number. Grandma's going to get to stay in the nursing home. Ellie, she was always going to get to, at least now we're all admitting it. And we're going to see, I think, as the session progresses, a more reasonable number. And the good news is we have plenty of ways to address it, be it general revenue and growth and collections, or one-time money through an accumulated surplus, which using one-time money to bridge our Medicaid deficit is something that has been done several times in the past, including the immediate past 4 or 5 years, be it through stimulus funding or from completely depleting the trust fund that had accumulated a balance of over $400 million. So using one-time money is an accepted practice in the Capitol. What we're going to do is make sure that we fully fund what needs to be funded, only to bridge a gap to actually reforming the system and putting us on a path to long-term stability where we don't need to dip into trust funds or stimulus funds or GIF funds to make this happen. So the money's there, we're gonna fund the program, but we're gonna do it in a responsible way and only after we're convinced that we've done what we need to do to put the system on the path to the long-term solvency.
What do you think are some of the things that need to be done to put the system on a path to long-term solvency?
Yeah, and I think that's the debate that we're going to start having soon. Like it or not, the first few weeks of the session have been completely dominated by expansion, it seems like. And I think we're going to finally at least hit pause on that for a little bit and kind of move into, over the next few weeks, what can we do different? And I think there's going to be a lot of proposals. Really, there's going to be no shortage of proposals on how we can tweak the system.
Do you have some ideas on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're going to get into a lot of that in the next couple of weeks. And a lot of members, I think you're going to see members who haven't really even been involved with the debate coming forward with ideas on how we can do things better and different. So I think that's coming.
Give me one thing. You're dodging my question on this.
No.
Give me one example of something you're going to do, want to see proposed to make it differently.
It's fair enough. I mean, right now we don't do any income verification or any means testing for a lot of our programs, including some of the ones with the highest enrollment. The thresholds for enrollment are already very high for a lot of the programs, but we don't cross-reference or check at all to make sure that what people are saying when they're applying for programs, what they're putting on those applications is accurate. I think before you even start talking about anything else, simply talking about verifying that the people that are on the system are supposed to be on the system is a good place to start.
All right. Last question for you. On the subject of expansion, philosophically, where do you stand on expansion? Opposed to it? In favor of it? In favor of finding some sort of compromise?
Yeah, I mean, I think philosophically where I stand is that the fact that we could even be talking about having over a third of our population qualify for government assistance and really completely funding government health care because they're so poor ought to be the thing we're talking about. So I want to make sure that we do things to make sure that 10 years from now, 35% of Arkansans aren't in that federal poverty level range where they're having to rely on government for their living. That's the opposite of everything we should be. And so philosophically, I guess I start out from being just almost embarrassed that we're there and wanting to do some things to change it. But then I come back to after we do some things to put our state on a path to prosperity that helps all Arkansans, raise our median incomes, make insurance more affordable. You know, how do we make sure that the 750,000 people that are covered now in Medicaid are getting the best services in the state, spending the dollars wisely? So it's just, you know, I don't want to dodge another one, but it's just philosophically, it's a very tough pill to swallow. How we're even here.
Ruby Brock from our content partner Talk Business talked with Representative John Burris, a Republican from Harrison, late last week. You can see and hear more from that interview at talkbusiness.net. Support for TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from 4 offices in Texas, Arkansas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at aecc.com.
The Oscar-nominated film Zero Dark Thirty opens with a declaration that the story is based on firsthand accounts of actual events. But lawmakers like Senator Dianne Feinstein take issue with the film's depictions of torture and want the film branded as fiction. I'm Celeste Headley. The shifting opinions on what's torture and what's not. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon at 1 on KUAF 91.3 FM.